Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Back in 1997, I headed off to Los Angeles from England, from Derby in England, and was going to go to Bible college for 4 years in Anaheim. And ended up not happening. I was there for about 6 weeks and ended up going back to the UK. But I fell in love with California then, and I've always thought one day maybe I will live there again. But in the back of your mind, anybody thinking of moving to California, you must have in the back of your mind earthquakes. So we're going to talk about that now. We've got a brand new book called The Great Quake Debate, and the author is Susan Howe. She's a research seismologist in Pasadena, California. Her popular science books include Earth-Shaking Science, What We Know and Don't Know About Earthquakes, and The Richter Scale's Measure of an Earthquake, Measure of a Man. And I'm delighted to welcome her as we look at this new book, The Great Quake Debate. How are you, Susan?
I am good. How are you?
Yeah, you've been busy writing all these books. So you're not in California at the moment. You're in Wisconsin and with your grandchildren. I hope you're enjoying some grandchildren time.
I am. I'm trying hard to stay safe here in the heartland.
Yeah, that's the main thing at the moment, isn't it? That's for sure. Here we are. You've been worrying about earthquakes all this time, and this is something that's really affected. But again, this is a major question for a lot of people who are maybe considering moving to California. And as I spoke to my producer earlier, when she was in San Francisco as a tourist, some of the locals, there was a bit of a shake and all the tourists stood up and all the locals just kept drinking their coffee. So it's part of everyday life as well. Now, this book really goes back in time to a great debate that took place between Bailey Willis and Robert T. Hill. How far back is this, Susan?
It really started in the 1910s, and then it heated up through the 1920s and came to a full rolling boil in 1926 after an earthquake struck Santa Barbara in 1925.
And so you kind of studied the two approaches, I suppose, by these experts. Just tell us a little bit about do you delve into the characters of the people involved in this debate as well?
Oh, very much. And I realized along the way, they both left mountains of papers behind. So I got to know them, and they were both fascinating characters. They were both born before the U.S. Civil War, which really shaped one of their lives in particular. And then their trajectories intertwined throughout their careers. And what I realized is you couldn't separate the people and the personality from the science and the debate that really did shape what played out later.
Now, that's very interesting, because we are hearing from experts all the time on coronavirus and COVID-19 situation that we're in. Personalities do come in, even because we always say, well, we're listening to the science, but actually there's differing views from scientists, and there was nothing new. There was in those days as well.
Yeah, there's some interesting parallels for our times, because you're exactly right. Now and then, the scientists weren't 100% agreed, and you could pounce on this versus that difference. But if you looked carefully, listened carefully to what both Hill and Willis were saying, they were agreed on the key messages, which was that we should prepare for earthquakes. So I don't think, and in this case, I don't think, you know, the scientists may have some disagreements about COVID in detail, but they're fundamentally saying the same thing about the need to take precautions.
Yeah, and a lot of them have been saying that for quite a while, long before it actually arrived, about an influenza that the British government had a survey that went out, and the advice was prepare for a pandemic. And really, we can debate now whether the preparations were in place or not. With this, what was the main differences then between the two?
I think it was somewhat a matter of style. Willis was kind of inclined to scare people into action. Yeah. You know, when you're a seismologist, you understand the risk, and you know that the risk can be mitigated. So that's the thing. You want people to take it seriously. And how do you do that? And Willis was towards the end of the spectrum that, you know, just maybe scared people a little bit. And he came out with very close to a prediction that a big earthquake was going to happen within 3 to 5 years. Whereas Hill was more cautious and judicious, and he was actually more aware, I think, of the state of the science. So he was, in a lot of respects, rightly kind of challenging some of the statements that Willis was making.
How much were they feeling their way in the dark? How much more do we know now that was superior to what they knew in that particular time? That's a very difficult question to answer about, isn't it?
Yeah, no, we know so much more than they did. And in part, the 1933 Long Beach earthquake kind of came along and settled the debate. But back then, the question was, how much are earthquakes a hazard in Los Angeles specifically? And there was some debate about that. And people knew that there were earthquakes in California, but were they really going to be severe? And there was just so many unknowns. People didn't know how strong the ground could shake in a magnitude 7 or even 6 earthquake. So we've learned an awful lot about earthquake hazard over 100 years.
We've all seen the movies, San Andreas Fault and so on, and you know, we assume that when there is an earthquake, The Rock is going to come along and save us all, or whatever, or Bruce Willis or somebody.
The Rock's daughter in that movie I liked a lot. That movie was good, silly fun. It wasn't a documentary, obviously.
Of course, but in many ways, it does put it on the map, though, does it not?
Well, I think people in California by now, earthquake hazard is no secret. 100 years ago, a lot of people just weren't aware of earthquakes. I talked to somebody who lived through the 1933 earthquake. And when it happened, they thought it was the end of the world because they just had never heard of earthquakes. And that's different now.
And you're talking about Los Angeles in particular, the kind of debate centered around Los Angeles. How much more do we know about the forecast, I suppose, for Los Angeles as a city itself? How dangerous is LA for earthquakes?
You know, there's still some debate about that. So we've mapped out a lot of faults in the LA area, including the Newport Inglewood, which broke in 1933, and then we saw the Northridge earthquake. So we know a lot more about faults. We know a lot more about the San Andreas and how often it produces big earthquakes. There is still some debate about how strongly Los Angeles will shake when a big earthquake happens on the San Andreas, because we haven't seen, that hasn't happened in modern times, so we don't have any data. And it's somewhat like the debate back in 1920. You know, we know more, but you know, we haven't seen that experiment yet.
So what are the challenges that face scientists now in communicating the news? Because like you say, we're still a lot in the dark, aren't we? We need the earthquake to know more about it. Is that simple terms?
We do learn so much from every major earthquake, especially if we can catch the data. Because they're fleeting, we can't just go create earthquakes in the lab. But it's the same challenge that Hill and Willis faced, that there's this vanishingly fine line that you want people to take the hazard seriously because you can mitigate the risk. But if you cross over this vanishingly fine line, then you're saying the sky is falling and then people start to tune you out. Yeah. So we're still struggling to find the right messages. If you're going to live in California, you know, earthquakes are always a possibility. You can only reassure people to a point. It's something you have to live with in California and other places.
And again, relating that to another completely different topic, well, maybe it is linked in some ways, the environment, of course, and we used to call it global warming, but climate change and stuff. Yep. There are people taking one approach that is, we're all doomed, and others that are less dramatic about it. And maybe the first one, the first approach is the right one, you know, because we just don't know fully what's going to happen. So that kind of plays out in that area as well. And do you find when you are being quite forceful and saying, actually, you know, we do need to change, people switch off from that?
I think people can definitely switch off when the message is overly alarmist. Then the reaction is, well, we're doomed. So, you know, what's the point of worrying about it? So, yeah, again, it's that vanishing fine line that you want to get the message across. You want people to take it seriously without going quite too far.
Yeah. How seriously are people taking it then at the moment? Because our local councils and town, I don't know what you call them in California, but we call them councils and town halls and so on, and governors, are they, say, you know, are there new restrictions on buildings, new buildings going up? How's that playing out in reality?
Oh, there's been a tremendous amount of preparedness work done in California. We have very strict building codes, and they've been ratcheted up in terms of the requirements as we've learned more. There was a major campaign to retrofit the bridges and overpasses after the Northridge earthquake. The utilities have thought seriously about their lifelines. So that's one thing that reassures me quite a bit. Living in California is that we really are prepared for earthquakes, more so than, say, the Seattle Pacific Northwest in North America, where they didn't really appreciate their earthquake risk until the end of the 20th century.
Now, I don't want any spoilers because we want people to buy the book, but as you, Susan, been studying these two scientists and their different approaches and maybe even different communication styles, is there one in particular that you're leaning towards more? I think I've already gauged that you're maybe leaning a little bit more to Robert T. Hill, but I might be wrong there.
Oh, he was a pain in the backside after my own heart. No, he's, you know, scientists fall into different camps. They're the crusaders and they're the skeptics. And on the matters of science, I think Hill was right more than he was wrong. He was wrong sometimes. But he was also, I find him just a fascinating and very sympathetic character, the childhood he had, and then to give away a little of the story, the fact that he ended up on the Texas frontier as a young man making his own way. He was such an interesting and accomplished individual. He's the one that colleagues described as a near genius in his geological abilities. Not saying that I'm a genius, but, it was just a lot of fun to do a deep dive into his papers.
Now, we're living in times when we almost don't believe anything we hear from anybody in authority anymore, and fake news and all this sort of stuff. And we take with a pinch of salt media bias and all this. Is it difficult in this time now to kind of say, actually, the scientific facts are this, when actually sometimes we're still discovering it, so we can't be as dogmatic about it? And we've always felt that science is pretty a dogmatic thing. We can take it to the bank, to use an old term.
Well, we can, you know, there's some things we don't know, but there's a lot of things we do know, so we can communicate those messages. But, yeah, here in the U.S., the rejection of science as being somehow political is pretty darn discouraging.
Yeah.
Because there are, you know, we're debating at the forefront of, you know, where we're pushing the envelope. But there's science has learned an awful lot up till now. And so there are messages that we're sure about, and we can communicate them clearly.
I was listening to somebody talking to a very well-known editor of The Lancet in the UK, the medical journal, about coronavirus. And obviously the person from The Lancet is a scientist, knows what they're talking about, but it doesn't matter even if you have all the credentials in the world. Some people are just not going to take what you're saying and believe it. And I'm sure that's the case even in this area when it comes to, you know, the great possibility that there's a big earthquake on the way for California.
Yeah, I think we're sort of past that hill in California because we've seen big enough earthquakes and that, you know, that to really see for yourself what's at stake gets the message across. So people saw Long Beach, they saw the buildings collapse. Yeah. Later, people saw the freeways collapse in 1994. That, you know, gets people's attention with pandemics. If you know somebody who gets sick, that gets your attention.
Yeah.
But you really hope that the messages get across short of having to go through the actual disaster.
Well, let's hope you don't have to. I always wondered because, as I say, I was in California for a few weeks many years ago. Do people live on edge just assuming this could be the day, you know, or does it kind of get pushed to the background somewhere?
It gets pushed to the background, but then a year ago, the Ridgecrest earthquakes happened. So there was a 7.1 in the desert.
Yeah.
So it was far enough away from where most people are living that it didn't cause damage in Los Angeles or San Bernardino. It did shake. It was quite strong. My house shook. I knew it was a big earthquake. That got people on edge because it was the first good-sized earthquake in 20 years. And that rattled people because it's a reminder. Maybe you've put it out of your mind, but then all of a sudden, here's this reminder, and so then people worry. And then, so you can use that as a teachable moment and remind them of the need to prepare. And that's the thing with earthquakes. The preparedness really does make all the difference.
Well, the book sounds great. It's available on our website, Susan. If anybody wants to buy a copy of it, you're most welcome to do so, tre.radio. The book's called The Great Quake Debate. Trying to say that after you've had a few drinks. The Great Quake Debate by Susan Howe, and it's available on our website, tre.radio. Susan, thank you for coming on and joining us. And I'm going to play Carole King, I Feel the Earth Move. It was just, I had to play this song, it's a law. So thank you, okay. Susan. Thank you for coming on. Bless you.
Thank you
bye
so
bye.
Much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.